From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a racetrack and in Nazi Germany and in the streets of Gotham and on a movie set. These are just a few of the settings of this year's Best Picture nominees at the Oscars, which air live on Sunday. Joker leads the pack with 11 nominations, but some critics are saying Parasite could pull off a Best Picture win, despite being a bit of an underdog. Then there are the acting and directing categories, where criticism about lack of diversity is playing like a broken record in Hollywood. Only one actor of color is up for an Oscar. That's Cynthia Erivo, who played Harriet Tubman. And no women were nominated for Best Director, leaving Little Women director Greta Gerwig notably snubbed. It has many Oscar fans wondering what it will take to change the industry when years of op-eds and hashtags and the like, well, maybe they moved the needle for like a year, but here we are again. Exactly 1 month ago, we welcomed a panel of film critics and buffs to talk about Ricky Gervais's monologue at the Golden Globes. And during that conversation, we did a bit of an Oscars preview, but this hour, this is the full deal. We're going down the list of what is nominated, who will win, and who should win, among other issues. So hello to Adam Lubiteau, film critic for the City newspaper. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Hello to Linda Maroney, a filmmaker and director and programmer for the One Take Film Festival. Nice to have you back here.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Jackie McGriff, a film fan and owner of Jackie Photography. Welcome back to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And hello, Jack Garner, on the line with us. Are you snowed in somewhere?
Oh, I am, and I wanted to be there really badly, but unfortunately I couldn't get my sled dogs to behave.
I thought you were avoiding us because the New Zealander who was on last hour, Mike Johansson, we all know that he's pulling for Taika Waititi because they're, you know, his New Zealand brethren. But he also said that you're way off when it comes to liking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he wanted to remind you through me that that movie is still terrible.
Well, I wouldn't call it terrible, but that's not the one my heart is wrapped around this year. I love The Irishman, but I got to be honest, I do have an ulterior motive, and because of full disclosure, I will tell you that the video effects, or rather the visual effects editor, the man who put all those de-aging stunts back into the movie after they were performed, was none other than Matt Garner, our son.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, so
he worked on that film. He's the visual effects editor. But I still think it's a masterpiece. I think Scorsese has taken that whole gangster genre, which he probably, next to Francis Ford Coppola, is most responsible for. And I think he's just finally wrapped it all up with an incredible elegy of a film. And I think it was a masterpiece.
You got to recuse yourself when that's going on, man. You got to warn me that you've got like nepotism going on
here.
He
has real skin in the game.
America actually cares about this stuff now, Jack. It's a new thing. But anyway, look, so Jack, I'll start with you and then I'm going to go around the table. Let's start with the nominees for Best Picture. And I guess I should read the whole list here. The Best Picture nominees include, why do I not see, there we are, Ford vs. Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. Jack, what will win and what should win?
I believe that 1917 will win. Amazing movie about World War One with an amazing thing where they use the camera to get you more involved with this film than you ever thought possible. And my favorite film, of course, is The Irishman, and I really mean that. But I also see an upset special looming here, Parasite. If enough people saw it and enough people can get over the idea of a South Korean film with subtitles, it's an amazing film.
All right, Adam Lubiteau. Will...
The bottom line is in 17.
Okay, will win, should win.
Yeah, I'm sadly going to echo Jack here. I think 1917 is going to win. I wish Parasite could pull it off, but I don't think it's going to happen just because I feel like because it's also nominated for international film, people feel like voters are like, well, we gave it that, so we can't also give it picture. Which I wish, you know, they wouldn't think that way.
Well,
but I feel like they still do.
Well, Adam, Jillian and Arondecoit emailed before the program saying, can someone explain the reason why a foreign film is making the Best Picture nom list for the second year in a row? What happened to the separate category? I mean, I guess it can be nominated for both.
I mean, yeah, ostensibly everything is eligible for Best Picture. It's just the Oscars, you know, weigh heavily on the American side just because of, you know, how the voting block has been, you know, diversity-wise, has been, you know, heavily in the Americas, but they try to increase international voters, I think we're going to see more of that happening.
Okay.
And
I dove in. I was just going to say, the only other thing to keep in mind is that no foreign language film has ever won. They've been nominated, but none has ever won.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to say, there's another film as well, Honeyland, that's up for Best Documentary Feature, and it's also up for Best Foreign Language Film. So it's there's more than one of those things happening.
Which, yeah, is that the first time that's happened?
I think so, for documentary. I think so.
I was surprised. But I love that movie, so I'm glad to see
it's
recognized
gorgeous.
That way.
Yeah.
Linda Maroney, will win, should win.
I'm pretty much in the same camp as these lads. I think 1917 will take it, but I do think Parasite deserves it.
Everyone's going with 1917, but we got two for Parasite. Jackie?
So, like everyone else has been saying, 1917, I think, is the the quintessential, like, Oscar movie. It's a very safe movie, you know, and typically I feel like war stories, definitely, like, if there's if it's in there, it's gonna most likely win awards. But I'm rooting for two. If Parasite doesn't get it, my personal would probably be Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, somebody finally is on the team with me. Now look, I don't see a whole lot of films. I've seen most of Joker, but I saw Jojo Rabbit and I was blown away. I couldn't believe it, Jackie. I thought, this film takes so many risks. I can't believe you're making me laugh at some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then it is so moving at a time that is probably the most timely reminder of how stupid it is that we make kids hate people when they don't even know why they hate somebody.
Oh, yeah, I mean, prejudice is learned. And in here, that's that on top of like a bunch of layers in this film is definitely hit like over and over and over again without like being preachy. It's very, it's subtle in the way that it's done. And there are parts, of course, in there that you're laughing at, that you're like, should I be laughing at this? But then there's also a film where there are very real and like serious situations that are happening, and it just does it so very well. So.
Well, we do have a clip, and I've got to, if you haven't seen Jojo Rabbit, I have to give it a little bit of a setup here, because one of the characters in the clip is Hitler, but it's not Hitler. It is the child, Johannes, who's 10. I know we're laughing at Hitler, and trust me when I tell you, that is not laughing at the historical Hitler. The 10-year-old Johannes he's really a nice kid, but he is growing up in the late days of the Third Reich, and he's in a Nazi camp, and they're trying to train the kids to become more, you know, sort of able to kill and be violent and prepare for war. And they're in the woods with the kids, and they suspect that Johannes just doesn't have it in him. And so they bring him a rabbit in the woods, and they say, break its neck, and he cannot bring himself to do it, and he gets laughed at, and the Nazi counselors are laughing at him, and so he runs off in the woods. Now his imaginary friend is Adolf Hitler, but you know, it's not Hitler, it's his imaginary Hitler, so it's kind of a childlike Hitler, and it's played by Taika Waititi, the director. So let's listen. This is Johannes, the 10-year-old, in the woods after the whole embarrassing scene when he couldn't kill the rabbit. Let's listen.
Poor Jojo. What's wrong, little man?
Hi, Adolf.
Want to tell me about that rabbit incident? What was all that about?
They wanted me to kill it. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
Don't worry about it. I couldn't care less.
But now they call me a scared rabbit.
Let them say whatever they want. People used to say a lot of nasty things about me. Oh, this guy's a lunatic. Oh, look at that psycho. He's gonna get us all killed. I'll let you in on a little secret. The rabbit is no coward. The humble little bunny faces a dangerous world every day, hunting carrots for his family, for his country. My empire will be full of all animals. Lions, giraffes, zebras, rhinoceroses, octopuses, rhinoctopuses, even the mighty rabbit. Cigarette?
Oh, no thanks, I don't smoke.
Let me give you some really good advice. Be the rabbit. The humble bunny can outwit all of his enemies. He's brave and sneaky and strong. Be the rabbit.
Yeah, it, trust me, if you haven't seen it, it's weird. But you will laugh, but you will also be deeply moved. because the boy who the fake Hitler is talking to, the imaginary Hitler, is a 10-year-old who's really wrestling with not wanting to hate the way that the Nazis are teaching to hate. And his mother, Scarlett Johansson, I don't think this gives much away, is has sort of secretly housed a Jewish girl in the attic of their house. And it turns out to be a beautiful story and weird and funny. And I just loved the movie. I couldn't believe it. But let's see if everyone else agrees with Jackie and me. Adam, did you like it?
Oh, I knew you were going to go to me first. Okay. I have to out myself now that I wasn't as big a fan of Jojo Rabbit as a lot of people.
Cut his mic.
I expected
that. He actually cut his mic. Thank you, Rob Braden, the engineer, actually cut his mic. Yes.
Well played.
So, okay. Go ahead, though. No, this is more fun when we disagree. Go
yeah,
ahead.
I mean, I liked it. It just didn't, something about it didn't entirely work for me. I don't know if it was the mix of tones that I didn't mind that. And I mean, people have done that before. I mean, going back to, you know, like Chaplin, Great Dictator, like people have made fun of Hitler, and Life is Beautiful has made a comedy-ish out of the Holocaust. But I don't know. It didn't always land for me.
No, that's interesting to me. So what specifically do you think was the most clumsy or didn't really work? Without trying to give too much away, because Adam's point's a strong one. There's a lot of different genres. When people say, well, what's that? Is it a comedy? What didn't really work for you?
I struggle with this. I watched it with my boyfriend Matt, and afterwards, you know, he loved it. And as we kind of talked about it, I was trying to work through why I didn't like it. And one of the things I landed on that kind of rubbed me the wrong way was the fact that in the end, as you talked about, Jojo finds out that his mother is hiding a young Jewish girl in their home. And it sort of becomes about their relationship. And so it became a story about an oppressed person being forced to prove their humanity to their oppressor, if I'm zooming out on the theme. And I think I'm kind of tired of those stories. Like, I think about things like Green Book last year, just also kind of about that.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I think that weighed into it, that I was like, I've seen this, I'm kind of over seeing those kinds of stories. And again, I didn't dislike the movie, it just, I wasn't over the moon. I was like, yeah, that was good.
I hear you. Now, I will just say from my perspective, I think that criticism is totally logical, and I get why it can be kind of wearying. The reason it didn't sort of hit me that way was, this wasn't, to me, it was really about kids. It was about the way we teach kids to hate, right, and the way kids can sort of be smarter than the adults in the room and overcome that, and what we have done for generations now, and how timely that is at this moment where we're so mistrustful of people who are different. And I thought there was some beautiful moments, but I take that criticism. Linda, what did you think?
I really enjoyed the film, and I saw it with my sons, and they're 14 Ooh. And 12. Mm-hmm. So I thought this was an important film for them to see.
Oh,
and they're probably listening at home right now on a snow day. But they're
probably not listening to you.
Yeah, they probably never listen to me if we're really telling the truth here. But it was amazing conversations to have afterwards about film technique and acting and writing, but also the concept of what we were talking about of humanity and, you know, all of that aspect. So it was really fascinating, you know, to see it as a parent with my children.
How did it hit them?
They loved it. They both loved it. They loved the two young lead actors. They fell in love with the boys. They loved, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but I'll just say they loved the other characters as well. You know, we discussed everything from music choices to shots to all the films. I mean, we're a filmmaking household, so that's sort of our family store. So at the dinner table, we talk about that stuff. But they really loved it and have been talking about it since we saw it, which was a few weeks ago at this point.
Okay. Jack Garner, what do you think?
I really liked it as well, and I think of all the genres that we're talking about that it flirts around with. To my mind, this movie is a very familiar genre in film, which is called the coming-of-age movie. I think this is a boy sort of coming of age, and it's the kind of thing where he, you know, he has to come to grips with the fact that his guardian angel is Adolf Hitler. That's what I tend to call him. You could call him an imaginary friend, but he's also kind of a guardian angel. And I think what the point of the girl being hidden in the attic or in the house, being protected, to my mind, it's the important aspect of it is how the influence it has on the boy in terms of him, you know, coming to where he really, what he really realizes what he should believe and what he the way he should be. And I think that which then allows him to, you know, in effect, reject his guardian angel. Mm. So, you know, it's that old trick, you know, the old cartoons where you have the devil and the angel on your shoulder. And that's what the Hitler character is in this film. And that's how I saw it. And I enjoyed the film a lot. Although I also found myself laughing at the concept of what the pitch meeting must have been like, the guy going in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what the amazing thing is, how this thing got made.
There should be a documentary about the pitching of this movie.
Yes.
I would watch that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that's Jojo Rabbit. And by the way, this is also a line from the trailer, so it doesn't give too much away. But if anything stays with you, it's the Jewish girl telling Jojo, she thinks she's 17 in the film, and she tells the 10-year-old, "You are not a Nazi. You're a 10-year-old boy who wants to fit in, who wants to be part of a club." Mm-hmm. And that says a lot, not just about Nazi Germany, but about so much more. So we've got a clip from some other films here. But before we get into some other films that I've got clips from, I don't have a clip from 1917 because I don't just have a single tracking shot with a bunch of explosion sounds. So just briefly here, to the extent that we think it will win, even if our panel generally would like to see something else win, Jack, I'll start with you. Why is this film as successful as it has been?
Well, Jackie is right in that it is a relatively safe film. It is a kind of a film that often wins or traditionally kind of wins an Oscar. But I also think it's worthwhile. That's not to put it down. It's a really, first of all, we don't have a whole lot of really good films about World War I. We have a ton of films about World War II and Vietnam. But World War I is not quite so much. There are a few great, great classics, of course. But this is really powerful. But I also love, and I think it's important to the story, it's not just a gimmick, the idea of the one long tracking shot, because you are with these young men who are on this incredible mission through the trenches and over no man's land and the death-defying kind of things they have to do, and you're with them every single moment. And that makes it, you're into this war. You're part of this scenario. And I think that is also very helpful in terms of the experience aspect of this movie. And so I think, you know, you don't learn a whole lot. We all know about the trenches. We know, well, not everybody, but most people know about the trenches and the war and all that. But what this is, it's about the human experience of what you sometimes have to do to try to do the brave and right thing to do. And I think it's a very, very good film. And Sam Mendes is a good filmmaker. He made American Beauty several years ago. And the guy knows how to make a movie, and I think this is quite powerful.
Okay. Adam?
I can't believe I'm going to be the curmudgeon of this.
Do it! Absolutely!
Because I also wasn't wild about 1917. I appreciated it on the technical side because it's, I mean, a hugely impressive achievement. But that one-shot technique, I found took me out of it too much.
So focused on it?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know if that's just, you know, the critic in me that, you know, occasionally, even when I found myself, you know, starting to be drawn in, something would happen, I'd be like, oh, wow, how'd they do that? And so it put up a barrier between me and getting emotionally invested in the movie.
And, you know, that's an interesting point because I was thinking, having not seen the film, knowing that it's this sort of this one-track shot thing, how much I'd be looking for that, but mm-hmm. You're right. That might take me out of actually just kind of listening and getting into the story.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm in the minority on that because I know a lot of people really loved it, and you know that technique drew them in. But for whatever reason, it, you know, had the opposite effect on me.
Don't ever apologize for being the curmudgeonly critic. I love that. Briefly, I know you didn't want it to win, but did you like 1917?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed 1917. I love war stories, and so it's right up my alley. It's one of the first that I'd seen in the Best Picture category. And I think as far as the one-track shot, so like, I mean, I can see both camps really with that, because I feel like in the past few years it's been like one of those things that's on trend. More and more films have been doing that. It didn't necessarily, however, take me out of the film. I felt like it actually made sense for what like the subject matter is, and you're following these two, and so it's kind of just like you're on the outside of these two, and this is their experience and everything like that. This is what they're experiencing. So that didn't bother me as much, but I can also see how if you're, you know, if you know that going in and everything, that how it could take you out of the movie, mm-hmm. and then also that mm-hmm. it's like, okay, like it's like another one of those things that's just gonna, like each film is gonna try to use it in some way.
Linda?
I haven't seen 1917 yet. I know. I'm in the thick of programming for the Documentary One Take Festival in the spring. So I haven't seen everything, but from what I know from the Academy in years past, that's the safe choice of what they're going to pick.
Yeah, sounds safe. All right, so I know, Adam, I think you did like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yes?
I did.
Okay, so we've got a clip to play from that. This is a scene between two, well, I would say they're the two male leads. DiCaprio is nominated for Best Actor. Brad Pitt is nominated for Supporting Actor. But this scene is between Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Rick Dalton, and a young co-star he's working with on set, and it touches on one of the movie's major themes. Let's listen.
What do you read?
It's a biography on Walt Disney. It's fascinating. He's a genius, you know. I mean, a once in every 50 or 100 years kind of genius.
What are you, 12?
I'm 8. What are you reading?
Just a Western.
What does that mean? Is it good?
Pretty good.
What's the story?
I haven't finished it yet.
I didn't ask for the whole story. What's the idea of the story?
Well, it's about this guy who's a Bronco buster. It's a story of his life. The guy's name is Tom Breezy, but everyone always calls him Easy Breezy. Now, when Easy Breezy was in his 20s and young and good looking, he could break any horse that you could throw at him. Back then, he just had a way. Now he's into his late 30s and he takes a bad fall and he messes up his hip. He's not crippled or anything like that, but he's got spine problems he never had before, and he spends more of his days in pain than he ever did before.
Jeepers, this sounds like a good novel.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Where are you in it?
About midway.
What's happening to Easy Breezy now?
He's not the best anymore. In fact, far from it. And he's coming to terms with what it's like to be slightly more useless each day.
It's okay, Caleb. It's okay. Sounds like a really sad book. Poor Easy Breezy. I'm practically crying and I haven't even read it.
About 15 years you'll be living it.
All right, Adam Lubito, you loved it.
I did. As much as Quentin Tarantino can drive me nuts off screen, his movies just kind of work for me. And this one was, you know, also worked for me. It's a story about Leonardo DiCaprio's character and his best friend, played by Brad Pitt, his stuntman, trying to find success in Hollywood at the end of the golden age of Hollywood, 1969 Los Angeles. And it's also Sharon Tate is in there, famous actress, probably most famous for being murdered by the Manson family. But it sort of ties all these threads together into this story about, you know, the old guard and the new generation kind of nipping at their heels and, you know, just waiting to replace them. And it's sort of about that confrontation. And I thought really interesting ways. And I thought it was funny and it was a little sad and violent. And I just, yeah, it worked for me.
All right. Well, Jack Garner, Mike Johansson says it's self-absorbed crap.
I mean, I won't argue it's not self-absorbed.
Okay,
I don't think
so
it's
Adam
crap.
Says it is self-absorbed, but not crap. Is it self-absorbed, Jack?
No, I don't think. Well, not really. I mean, there's an aspect of that probably in everything Tarantino does, and that's probably what Mike sort of talked about. But that said, I agree with Adam. I think the film really does work. I think it really captures the era really well. And also, it's by the way, I that scene you played is one of my very favorite scenes in the film. But I also give Tarantino tons of credit for one of the most intense scenes I've ever seen is that's when Brad Pitt goes to the ranch where the Manson family's hanging out, and all these young girls are all laying around this old car that's on the grounds. And one critic, I wish I would have thought to say it, one critic said, it looked like all the birds gathering on the jungle gym and the birds. You don't know whether they're going to kill them or what they're going to do. And it's an amazing example of the kind of things that Tarantino can do. And of course, there's the ending, which we will not talk about, but I thought it worked. So I liked the film a lot, and that would certainly be in my top three or four of the year. I'm just not quite ready to give it the one spot, but I did like it a lot.
All right, something like 9 hours long, so set aside some time for it. did you have enough time?
I've seen it twice.
Jackie, you've seen it twice?
Yes. I loved it that much.
Wow. Did you take a vacation?
No. Between school and work and the movies, that's pretty much where my life is right now. So I live at the movie theater. So I saw it once in 35mm, and then I saw it again in just like regular, at the regular cinema and everything. And I've, for the most part, have always liked Tarantino's movies. This one, from start to finish, I loved the entire film. It worked for me.
Wow.
That clip that you just played, I just remember I was laughing here too, and it always gets me. That one and the one where Leonardo DiCaprio's character is like freaking out and like talking to himself in his trailer. It's the like one of the funniest bits like I remember, apart from like a few scenes in Inglourious. I love this film.
Even the ending, which again has some Manson family stuff.
Yeah.
We're not gonna get too much into.
Right. I mean, I've talked to friends about this. I'm a little conflicted, just like given all of our recent conversations about violence towards women.
Violence towards women and mm-hmm. movies with stabbings. Again, going down the list, 9 films or something nominated. Pretty sure they all have stabbings in them. Mm-hmm. This is the year of every movie's got to have a Little Women. Did
Does
that have a stabbing?
Women, I don't think Little
don't
Women
think
has
no.
stabbing in it.
Goodness,
it's the only one, though, I think.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. I mean, it's got some verbal stabbing. Jack, go ahead.
I was going to say, they didn't stab each other in Marriage Story either. There was a couple non-stabbing movies.
Okay. I mean, but be warned, viewers, most of them got some serious personal violence. Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, I feel like that does reflect what the Academy values in directing, because you've noticed those two we mentioned without the stabbings are two that did not receive nominations for director.
That's where I'm going next. So I've got a couple clips from Little Women, and we're going to talk about one that did not get a nom for best directing, and I want to know what our panel thinks about that. But let's listen. This is Little Women first. On an economic proposition, Amy gives Lori, who's a man, an economics lesson. Let's listen.
I've always known I would marry Rich. Why should I be ashamed of that?
It's nothing to be ashamed of, as long as you love him.
Well, I believe we have some power over who we love. It isn't something that just happens to a person.
I think the poets might disagree.
Well, I'm not a poet. I'm just a woman. And as a woman, there's no way for me to make my own money. Not enough to earn a living or to support my family. And if I had my own money, which I don't, that money would belong to my husband the moment we got married. And if we had children, they would be his, not mine. They would be his property. So don't sit there and tell me that marriage isn't an economic proposition, because it is. It may not be for you, but it most certainly is for me.
I told you, that's a verbal stabbing. So it turns out there is one in Little Women. No, that's a great scene. And then Joe talking about love. I'm so sick of it, she said. This is Joe on love.
I just feel like women, they have minds and they have souls as well as just hearts. And they've got ambition and they've got talent as well as just beauty. And I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. I'm so sick of it. But I'm so lonely.
Not nominated in the directing. Let me ask the director first. Should it have been?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
I definitely think it should have been. I think it was a very, very creative retelling of a story that so many of us already know. And it was done incredibly well. I mean, but in the history of the 92 years of the Academy Awards, only 5 women have ever been nominated for Best Director.
Looking down the list this year, the film's nominated all men.
Yep.
Irishman, Joker, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. Again, stabbings in all of them. So, or bombings. So when it comes to directing, though, I really want to kind of get inside the mind of a director here. When you say this, it's telling a story that we all know, that's sort of something that has been a standard for a long time. What makes a directing in a film like this special?
I think the director also brings out incredible performances from the actors. I mean, they're not directing themselves. And mm-hmm. so it's often interesting to see people get Best Director or Best Actor awards or Actress awards. And you know, the director wasn't nominated. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of weird. But I mean, the director, it's the visionary of everything. So they're the one that's making 1,000,003 tiny decisions every day of what goes into the film. So the whole output is really the director.
How do you feel about another slate of no women, for let aside Little Women, no women at all, again, nominated?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, the one place where things fare a little better is in the documentary category. And I know I harp back on this all the time.
No,
but
we're going to get to there in our second half hour, but yeah.
But just speaking, you know, brass tactics, basically of the 5 films, either 4 of them were either directed or co-directed by a woman in the documentary features and same in documentary shorts. And we can talk about that because budgets and are so much less and everything else, but we definitely fare better there. But again, it's not always great there. Mm.
Jackie, when it comes to Little Women, should it have been in the directing category? Because as Linda points out, it does have a nomination for actress in a leading role, actress in a supporting role, but not directing.
Absolutely. So I had never read I hadn't read the book and I hadn't seen any of the previous adaptations. So I was going in fresh. And what she brought to the Little Women, and like when I was doing my research, it was saying how each time it has been adapted, there has been something else particular to that generation in which in the year in which it's released that it speaks to. And that line that Joe says, like, I almost started crying because like it really got to me because it's so much of me, like how I think and everything as far as like, you know, being single and everything. And I'm constantly like harping on my friends and everything, you know, who want to find their partners in life. And I'm over here like, yeah, but it's not, I mean, life, that's not what life is all about. Like, and what she's saying about, you know, women being more than just about the heart, actually having souls, actually having ambition and wanting to, you know, have a full life. I think that spoke to me more than anything. And that I think is another thing. I mean, what Linda was saying about them being the visionary, that's exactly it. Like, you're making all these decisions at the same time, like at the end, like you're the person who is putting out this idea of like what, I guess, like what the movie should be and everything, and you know what it needs to say about the world, if in fact it has a message like that to put out to people.
Jack, could it have been on the list for directing? We lost you, Jack. Is Jack there? Good. Should it have been on the list for directing, Jack?
2 Jackies here. That's why we're getting
it. Oh, I'm Jack and Jackie. Yep. Jack Garner.
I'm sorry. I think it should have been, and I would. In fact, I have the place to put it. Whenever you think about that, by the way, you always have to think about who you move out. And I would move out Todd Phillips for the Joker, and I'd put her in there. That would be the spot for my money. I admire so much of what she did about the way that she made the film incredibly relevant. And to today and in so many ways, and also the gorgeous way she captured that aura at the time, even while making it relevant. And the performances she got from everybody cannot be faulted. I did have one slight fault, and people who I've talked to about this know this, and that is that I was bothered by the way she takes her narrative and bounces it all over the place. You never know what, you know, you have to tell by the hair length, where are they in this movie? Because just loves to jump around on the different time frames. And I'm not quite sure. I suspect that a little bit maybe she's just trying to differentiate herself from the 4 or 5 other versions that have come along over the years. But other than that, I had great admiration for her, and I would have certainly put her in the spot.
Okay. Adam?
I absolutely think she should have been nominated. It's just, she did such a smart adaptation of material we've seen before, and you can really tell that she thought about what about the book spoke to her and kind of drew out some different themes and ideas. Mm-hmm. And I kind of disagree with Jack that I think there absolutely was a purpose behind her kind of mixing up the timeline. I thought that she used that to, you know, juxtapose certain moments in the book to draw a connection between them, and also kind of certain relationships that are introduced later in the book by mixing it up get introduced earlier. So when they come to matter later, you already have a connection to those characters since you've seen them already. So there were things that I felt like she gave a lot of thought to. And that's kind of what I want in a best director. So,
all right. By the way, real quick, who's on this list here? If you're voting, then what does get the best director? Adam Lubiteau?
I would love Bong Joon-ho to win.
For just Parasite.
Because I loved Parasite and what he did with that. And the mix of tones in that movie is just so incredible to watch.
Okay, Jackie?
Same thing. Bong Joon-ho. I mean, he has to win. He was incredible.
Okay.
I would love him to win. Do I think he'll win? I don't know. I think it might go to Sam Mendes.
Yeah, that's I would agree. Again, with that. I don't know necessarily that he's going to
Sam
win.
Sam Mendes
he's
of 1917.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack Garner.
I agree with Linda. I think Sam Mendes will win, but I would also love to see Bong Joon-ho. And I think that is the real most logical and possible upset special on the whole list at the Oscars. I think that is a real possible thing that could happen. But I'm not sure it will.
Saying upset special for directing or for Best Picture itself?
And for both.
Wow.
But I think especially directing, I think it's easier for them to upset with the director than it is with Best Picture in some ways.
Yeah.
I think that too.
We're going to take our only break of the hour because we are way late. And when we come back with our panel talking Oscars, we're going to run down some of the other categories. We are going to talk docs because this is a great documentary town with a great documentary, well, Little's not just a documentary theater, but you know where you go to see the best stuff. And we're going to talk about what stood out among that field. We'll also talk about who our guests think should win and will win in the actor and actress categories and more here. So we're talking Oscars on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we sit down with Dr. Cephas Archie, the former chief diversity officer for the College at Brockport, who was recently fired. His firing has sparked an outcry on the campus community and even from public leaders in the Rochester City School District. They say diversity and inclusion matters, and they want more answers. We talked to Dr. Archie about what he knows about his firing on Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. All right, Linda Moroney, who is one of the really great filmmakers and great minds of that genre in this town, filmmaker and director and programmer for the One Take Film Festival. What's going to win for documentary feature, and what should win at the Oscars?
I think For Sama is going to win. It's a really wonderful story, made first-person account of life in Syria. And it's made for the filmmaker. She makes it for her daughter named Sama. It's overshot over a period of time. It's definitely been clearing house on most awards. I think it took the BAFTA and quite a few other awards. So I think it will win. There could be an upset with American Movie, which is this wonderful film about a factory in Ohio that was originally the last GM factory in Ohio there. And the filmmakers, Julia Reichert and Stephen Bognar, made a film called The Last Truck that was at the same factory when The Last Truck was being made there. But now it's a new factory bought by a Chinese company. And Julia's a really, really long-time, well-respected filmmaker. And she's very, very beloved in the community. So I wouldn't be surprised if people voted for that as well. I could see it going that way.
What do you see in terms of what's nominated? American Factory, The Cave, The Edge of Democracy, For Sama, and Honeyland. What stands out among what the Academy is looking at mm-hmm. when it comes to docs, and is it the kind of docs that you want to see elevated?
Typically, the ones that win the Oscar or are typically nominated are usually not the sort of popular fare of documentaries that do the best box office. Mm-hmm. So it's usually, I feel like there's two factors. It's one, what is the most important subject matter in some ways, and often, you know, told in a compelling way. Not that the subject matter is the only important thing, but also which film is the toughest to make? That also plays into documentary that I don't think necessarily does for fictional films. And often the Academy will fare for a foreign made film, a foreign story, and often early directors too.
And so what's coming up at the Little and in our community that we ought to be aware of as we keep docs in mind?
All the time. Well, we have Citizen K coming this month, the latest Alex Gibney film, which is an incredible story about Russia and Putin and oligarchs. So kind of topical.
I don't know what you're saying. Jack Garner, what do you make of the Academy when it comes to docs and whether we have enough sort of attention on this genre of film? I mean, it doesn't always get the biggest headlines, but in this town, I think thanks to the Little Theater and I think thanks to the filmmaking community, this is a real documentary town, and I kind of wish we talked about doc feature as much as we did Best Picture and others.
No, I agree with you. I think this is a great doc town, and I do agree with you also that Linda's a major part of it in terms of the way she programs the docs at the Little and the fact that she has a festival of them in, I think, is it April, Linda? I think
yeah, it's April 30th through May 3rd this year.
Oh, we'll talk about that coming up in the weeks to come.
I do think the Oscars tend to, like she says, go for some fairly sort of moderately serious themes. They don't go for the popular one. In the case of the popular ones, for example, this year we had some really good musical ones. We had a really good film about Miles Davis, another good film about Linda Ronstadt. We had about the author, Toni Morrison. Those would be sort of pop ones, and they usually end up on PBS, and you do get a chance to see them, and they're also in the theaters and all that, and they don't tend to get nominated. The one film that didn't get nominated this year that I did like a lot that was also kind of popular, and it was also made by a popular filmmaker, Ron Howard. I think he was behind it, wasn't he? Apollo 11. Apollo 11 was a really interesting film where they compiled footage that was already in existence but had not yet ever been seen about the Apollo mission. And it didn't get nominated, and Linda pointed out to me, we had a conversation about this the other day, and she says it's because it was not new footage that was shot, it was existing footage except that it had never been seen. So they're kind of drawing a funny line in the sand there. But I do think American Patriot's going to win. Forsama is also the one that's getting some buzz, and of course Honeyland's getting some buzz. But I do think they're important. I mean, just nonfiction and, you know, and nonfiction and fiction books belong in the same shelf in a lot of ways in terms of their impact on us, and it's the same thing with film. There's no reason that a great documentary can't be as moving and as memorable and as important to you as any feature film, any fiction film.
Adam and Jackie, anything you want to add on documentary films?
I do think it's funny that they always leave out, you know, ones that are so heavily archival footage. There's another one I thought of was Amazing Grace.
That was a film this year
that I loved that was literally just archival footage of Aretha Franklin concert from 1972.
They pushed that for last year. So they opened it in New York and L.A. before last year, hoping that they would get the Oscar nomination, and then they didn't. So they rushed it. So then the doc people in the Academy are like, oh, too early. You can't. You need to woo us, you know? So it was a whole big thing about
that. But I didn't think about the archival footage thing, and I should have, as I watched, what was the Linda Ronstadt, When Will I Be Loved? I don't remember if that was the name.
The
Sound of My Voice. When Will I Be Loved is one of the songs that was heavily featured in the film. I liked that documentary. Ton of great archival footage that I didn't even know existed. I kind of thought that was a film that didn't give us as much of the actual human being, but got a lot of the great music stuff. Interesting, though. Any you want to add on docs?
No, I am not as versed as all three of these awesome individuals. I have been hearing a lot about Forsama. I watched the shorts, which I know also don't get talked about as much, but I watched the live action and the documentaries for that one, and all of those films of which are very, very hard hitting. Definitely go watch them. They're incredible.
All right. So a little bit of time left here. So let's do actress first. I'm tired of men. actress in a leading role. Here are Cynthia Erivo as Harriet, Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story. Wait, Scarlett's for... Oh, I didn't even notice. Scarlett is for leading. Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story. how do we pronounce it? Saoirse Ronan for Little Women, Charlize Theron for Bombshell, Renee Zellweger for Judy. That's actress in a leading role. Adam Lubito will win, should win. Go.
I think will win. Renee Zellweger for Judy. Should win. I think it for me, it would be between Saoirse Ronan and Scarlett Johansson because I love those two performances.
Okay, Jackie McGriff.
Let's see. So I'm going to echo Adam here as far as what will win, Renee for Judy. And then as far as who I think should win, although I did love Saoirse and Scarlett's performances in both of those movies, I'm going to have to go with Cynthia for Harriet. That, again, like that performance hit me like a ton of bricks. It was just incredible. Not to, like I said, like not to say like the other performances weren't well done because they were, but I just think like Cynthia just knocked it out of the park.
She was amazing. All her facial expressions were in that was absolutely incredible.
Incredible. Yeah.
Okay, Linda, will win, should win?
I think it's pretty much the same as Jackie. I think Renee is going to walk home with the trophy, but Cynthia was absolutely incredible for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Jack Garner?
I think that Renee Zellweger will win. In fact, I think this is the one you can bet the house on. This is absolutely guaranteed. She will definitely win. I think she should actually win, not only for the amazing performance, but a lot of people may not realize that all those incredible songs sung by Judy Garland were sung by Renee Zellweger. She did the singing as well and did it quite well. So I think it's a remarkable performance. I do like the other ones that were mentioned, Charlize and Cynthia, or even for Harriet and Charlize Theron. But I think Renee deserves it and will win.
Actress in a supporting role also has Scarlett Johansson, this time for her role in Jojo Rabbit. Laura Dern in Marriage Story, Kathy Bates in Richard Jewell, Florence Pugh in Little Women, and Margot Robbie in Bombshell. Adam Lubito will win, should win.
Will win, I think Laura Dern for Marriage Story should win. I think my vote would go with Florence Pugh for Little Women.
Okay, Jackie McGriff.
It's the exact same thing. You took it right from me.
Laura Dern, Florence Pugh, Linda Moroni.
Yeah, I mean, I think Laura's been cleaning up house with all the awards well. And she's so gracious about stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen her about it. But Florence was incredible. Just so authentic in that performance as well.
Okay, Jack Garner.
Ditto.
That was easy. All right. Actor in a leading role, Antonio Banderas, Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver in Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, Jonathan Pryce in The Two Popes, Adam Lubito will win, should win.
Will win, Joaquin Phoenix, Joker, should win. I would love Antonio Banderas to take that one, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, Jackie McGriff.
I'm going to say, so it's going to be Joaquin Phoenix for lead actor. I haven't seen Pain and Glory, so I can't say anything about that. But I did love Adam Driver's performance in Marriage Story. That was gut-wrenching. For me, at least, I thought that was really good. So it'd be cool for him to win.
Okay, Linda?
Yeah, I haven't seen Pain and Glory either, but I've just heard wonderful, wonderful things. And Jack was telling me about that, too, the other day in our conversation. But I think Joaquin Phoenix is going to win.
Jack Garner, is that a fait accompli that Joaquin Phoenix gets to the statue this time?
Based on all the preliminary shows, I kind of like the Oscars back in the old days before they all these preliminary awards to tip you off of where everybody's heading. But it is what it is. And Joaquin keeps winning everything. He just won the British one a couple of days ago. So I think it'll be Joaquin. I would love to personally see one of those extremely rare. It only happened one other time. I'd like to see a tie, and it would be Adam Driver and Antonio Banderas tying. Mm-hmm. I think they're both phenomenal in their films.
Okay. Actor in a supporting role, Tom Hanks, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony Hopkins in The Two Popes, Al Pacino in The Irishman, Joe Pesci in The Irishman, Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Lubito will win, should win.
I think will win, Brad Pitt, and I actually think he should win too. As much as I also love Tom Hanks in Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, I love that movie, and I'm sad that that was the only nomination it got.
Okay, Jackie McGriff.
Oh, okay. This one is actually tough for me because two of these movies I have not seen. So The Two Popes and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, I missed it. So as far as what I think will win, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking like, between Anthony or Al Pacino. I loved Brad Pitt's performance. However, I don't know. I felt like, Joe Pesci actually kind of like, has my vote a little. But like I said, like, this one's harder for me just because there's two of them I haven't seen. And so, honestly, any of them.
Okay. Linda Maroney.
I think it'll be Brad Pitt as well. I have not seen some of them, but I did like Pesci's performance in The Irishman. I thought that was quite good.
Okay. Jack Garner.
I think it's going to be Brad Pitt, and I'm happy to see him get it. I think it's the best work he's ever done. However, I also love Joe Pesci and would give it to Joe Pesci, but Pesci has that problem that occasionally happens where you got two guys from the same movie, so you know they're going to butt heads. So I think it'll be Brad Pitt.
Similar question as we wrap the hour, but maybe you can take us in whatever direction you want. Any movie that's nominated or not, doc or not, you got a chance to see one movie in the next month. We're all busy. Jack Garner, we can watch one. What should we watch?
The Irishman, and applaud my son all the way through it.
Nepotism train. Can't get off the gravy train, Garner.
I
know you love it. Adam Lubito.
I'm going to plug my favorite movie of the year that hasn't opened a roster yet, but should be soon, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I believe is coming to Little sometime soon, within the next month. But I love that movie so much, and I hope people go see it.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Jackie?
This one's not nominated, but Just Mercy. It's about the superhero Bryan Stevenson. It's incredible work. Michael B. Jordan, again, in one of those Academy Award-winning performances, I think. Just Mercy. Definitely see it.
All right, Linda.
On that one, by the way. Bravo.
Everybody I've heard seen that loves it.
I would say if you haven't seen Parasite, go see that. That's the one to see.
I hear that is going to shake you up.
It's a mix of so many things at once and so well-crafted.
Yeah. All right, so we're all ready for the Oscars now. But by the way, Hollywood, I think I can say for everybody here, the sentiment is do better, look a little wider in your pool of nominees, Hollywood. Jack Garner, thanks. Always fun. Thanks for being with us.
It was great. Thanks a lot.
And for those who did have the sled dogs, as Jack said, Adam Lubito, film critic, his work in City Newspaper. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Jackie McGriff, owner of Jackie Photography. Always fun talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda Maroney, we're grateful for the work you do with the One Take Film Festival. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And our thanks to the whole team today. Tim Shea, thank you, Tim. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer. The whole team. I'm Evan Dawson. See something great. Stay indoors. Talk to you Monday.